Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Do you want to join me for a glass of wine? Considering the fact it's morning as this episode goes live, I'll actually pass, and well, I hope you do too. The conversation today revolves around our alcohol consumption. Emily was a wine mum. I'm not sure I'd heard the expression, as when I was raising my children, alcohol consumption was a treat on the weekend only, and only if there weren't too many soccer games or a guide camp to work into the schedule. But at this age, time, opportunity, finances make sitting down with a drink or two in the evening much easier. And it's certainly socially acceptable in my circle. I know the health risks. You do too. So, with this conversation with Emily fresh in my mind, I've decided to restrict my wine consumption. And don't think that means I'm just sitting with martinis or Bellinis or a tall G&T. Wine is pretty much all I drink, alcohol-wise. Emily shares her own experience and the path to becoming a certified alcohol-free coach. She also discusses health, both before and after abstinence. This conversation is not about guilt, it's about facts, and you each can figure out where on the spectrum you are. I want to tell you about a new feature before we get started. At the website, boomwithabang.com, I've created a resource section. You can look up previous episodes by subject, you can find books written by guests, some interesting courses and offerings, lists of jobs and philanthropic possibilities. Also, if you're curious about the life of a house and pet sitter, I'm journaling my journey. Listen now. So, what would you do if I told you I was banishing wine from my life forever? Okay, I heard some of you laughing. My guest today talks about wine mum culture. My active mum days are well behind me now, and I spent a lot of time as a single mum, so drinking just wasn't plausible as I was also the main chauffeur. That's one rule that is set in stone for me. If I need to get behind the wheel for any reason, it's zero consumption. But this later midlife season is different, I must admit. When the kids were younger and money was tight, my reassurance was that as long as I bought a bottle of wine on the weekend, we were okay. Needless to say, I always found the money to buy a bottle of wine to reassure the kids. Nowadays, finances are more comfortable. My responsibilities after 5 p.m. are pretty much non-existent. So, yes, I'll admit it. I often have a bottle of wine on the sideboard, and I open it if I darn well please. A few friends who I share wine with plan sleepovers, so no one is driving. And that fact, plus the great food that always shows up, results in more wine consumption than usual. I do know that we all consume more wine now than a few decades ago. There are a lot of changes for us as we traverse our 60s and 70s. Children are independent, or not. Spouses often have left, or are leaving, or have interests that don't interest you. Jobs are being retired from, with not enough planning into what we're retiring to. Different stresses, perhaps, but same stress load. I had a guest last year who called it gray area drinking. You don't need a drink to help you plan breakfast, but it's more than just one because it's a toast to the bride. Today's guest talks about liquid courage, relationships that don't revolve around wine, and navigating social situations with ease. Does any of that sound familiar? She is now alcohol-free. What more appropriate morning than December 25th to realize alcohol was not your friend? I think she'll share her story with us. Emily Allen, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, why are you chuckling?
I enjoyed listening to your intro. It was very accurate.
But at least you were rubbing your hands in glee, going, "Oh, I can get
No,
my fingers into her." No, that's great.
absolutely not. No.
Okay, perhaps the most obvious place to start. Do you mind expanding on your life as a busy mom and Christmas 2020?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I have two children, and they are now, one of them is 21 and my son is 17. So one is in college and the other one is still in high school. But when they were younger, it was became a habit of getting together with my other, mom friends to either have mom's nights out or even just hanging out with the kids. And there was usually always wine involved, and it became more, it was always at one point it became where it always was. At first, maybe when they were younger, it wasn't, but it just became like almost became the focus point of the getting together part. I mean, it was a way to vent and to share what was happening, but it was also just to get, that buzz. And it was a way to socialize too. Like, I felt like this is the way that I can connect with other moms. Nobody in our group was not drinking. And you kind of thought, if I decided not to, would I still be, invited to these things? Of course, at the time, I wasn't thinking about not. And so as time progressed, and then this Christmas morning was December of 2021. No, it was 2020. I'm sorry. My quit date was in 2021. So it was right at the end of 2020, the first, COVID Christmas. And I had noticed during the time of COVID, the isolation time, that I was still socially drinking, but I was by myself, at home in my kitchen, after dinner, just sort of stayed in the kitchen and continued to like scroll the internet, but and with a, wine in hand, that I could just refill and only have to walk over to my refrigerator. So I was aware of it, and I had questioned, I was just sort of tired of not feeling good anymore, waking up hungover. And I was like, this is just ridiculous. So that particular day, Christmas Eve, I had stayed up, wrapping presents, finishing up, and just, pouring my glass. And when I woke up that Christmas morning, with that hangover feeling, I was like, this is not worth it. This is not how I want to be for the rest of my life. And at that point, I really honestly couldn't see what was going to happen to make me stop and for that to become the rest of my life. So I, made the decision then, dry January. I knew dry January is coming, and I knew that was just like a common thing that lots of people did, and it seemed like a safe way to kind of ease into it, not make it a big deal. So I decided I'm going to try dry January, and had a week to prepare. Bought some non-alcoholic alternatives, just re started reading books about quitting, and I was really scared that I wouldn't be able to do it. And then I was like, what would that mean if I can't? What if I can't go 31 days or 7 days or 2 days? Like, I really didn't know how it was going to go. So I was scared, but I did it. And I felt so much better just within those first 3 weeks that I just kept going. And it wasn't easy, getting through. Like, there was definitely cravings, and I mean, like even the sense of not detoxing in the way that you think of somebody having to be hospitalized. I mean, it was just the feeling of I was really tired the first week, felt dehydrated, even though all I was doing was drinking water, but it was just my body was, clearing it out. So it wasn't easy, but by that third week, I was like, this is a secret that nobody's telling people. I felt like you can wake up in the morning and feel good. Like, who knew? So that was my really big eye opener.
It sounds like there was an incentive then, too, if you're feeling really good, to say, I can do this for another week or another month, or, and then you finally, I'm sure, found that it was just that's your new way of life.
I didn't feel like I was a person who was going to ever moderate successfully. In the past, like, it's sort of hard for me really to remember, but I do know that I did have times when I would sort of cut back, and I wasn't drinking as much then, so it wasn't as hard. Even I think I even probably went like, maybe a month or so without wine, like when my kids were much younger. But there was always something that would come up, like a party or something where I would then drink, and then it just slowly would trickle itself back into my routine. And So I had that in my mind, and I was like, you know what? I feel so good. This feels like a whole new way of life for me that I'm not even gonna tempt with moderation. So yeah, it's so like solid in me now that it just feels like this is the way I was meant to be. But it was so hard at that point to see that. Like I just had no way to know that this is how I was gonna feel because it was such a part of my identity, my routine, my social circle. So it was hard to see it. I couldn't see it. But then once I kind of just broke through that, I was like, this is it. This is how I'm meant to live the rest of my life.
Well, and I will admit too that sometimes, you've had a really, I do client work and I have a really difficult client, or at the end of my client week, those periods of time when I have clients, it's over. It's like, oh, good. I can celebrate with a glass of wine, or I can, I hesitate to use the word self-medicate after a hard client, but it is. And so those excuses become looser and looser.
Yeah, and with motherhood, especially like young motherhood too, I feel like it's so ingrained in us now. It's so normalized, and everywhere you look, it's like, little cups that say mommy juice on them or wine glasses, not really cups, but the just all of that just being put into our subconscious constantly that this is accepted. This is not only accepted, this is what you should do. This is your self-care. This is the way you can take care of yourself and relax and bond. And then it's also a way to celebrate and it's a way to mourn. I mean, it becomes like this is the answer to everything. And I feel like it really has been targeted towards women. More recently, like you mentioned, the percentage of women drinking has really gone up over the last few decades. And I think that young women too, if the young mother stage is where it sort of is the entry point.
I don't watch a lot of TV, but the ads that I see from on occasion, it's yeah, it is those young moms, and alcohol is always part of those shows, and in movies, that sort of thing. So it really normalizes it for the watcher of like, I'm sure they even have a little bit of FOMO, like what am I missing out? I'm not as cool as these moms. The TikTok moms or whatever they are these days. I'm showing my age, I'm sorry.
No, you're no, I think yeah, I don't participate in TikTok either, but yeah. Yes, and it's glamorized too. Like you're saying, it's definitely glamorized and it's sad.
So none of the young moms I know wear 5-inch heels, but they all know how
Right.
to open a bottle of wine. So, okay, so
So.
what was your path from being disappointed with yourself to you're an alcohol-free life coach? Like, what was that path like?
After that first year, I really was trying to just be kind to myself and go through each like thing that would normally revolve around drinking. I mean, my first vacation, my birthday, the holidays again, because this was January. So I went through everything and was just giving myself like the grace and just like see how this all goes. And then once I had the year behind me, it's like I've already done all these things once, whatever else comes at me, I know I can adapt and do it and get through anything that might have felt like a trigger. And so then I started thinking, it really brought out the entrepreneurial spirit in me. It's like I'm a pharmacist. Like that's my career that I've
Oh,
had for
okay.
30 years now. I just had my 30th graduate or anniversary of graduating from pharmacy school. And it's been a great career. I mean, it's fulfilling, but I felt like I want to be able to help somebody else experience what I've experienced, somebody who's, kind of walked that path because it's common, I feel like it's common. And I feel like more women are thinking about reevaluating the relationship with alcohol, but maybe just don't know how to go about it. I mean, I sort of did it on my own at first and then got into, groups, group programs and stuff with other women who are already alcohol free. And that was nice. But I think that also having somebody with you at, at the beginning, or even when you're just still thinking about it, to kind of help you figure out how it's going to work and what how this is going to go, and give you tips and encouragement, and being the person who's already walked through it, having that knowledge and inspiration. So then I just started. I knew about life coaches, just like the general term, and health and wellness, and I looked into alcohol-free life coaching, and I, found that there were certification programs, and so I started following the woman whose program I ended up doing. Her name is Karolina Jodkowska. It's a last name is I'm just blanking on where she's from. I mean, she lives in California, but her program is Euphoric AF is like her whole website and everything. And so I looked into that, and I was like, this looks amazing. And so I started that in, it was March of last year. So yeah, 2024, March 2024. And then we graduated, got our certifications, and then had some business coaching too after that. And so as I went through that program, I was like, this is really what I want to do. I want to be able to help other women, and also start my own business, like something I never would have thought of doing when I was still, a nightly drinker. Like, never would have crossed my mind. I've done many things since giving up alcohol that I would never have really, I would have been too scared to try. So it's given me that entrepreneurial spirit and that confidence too that I did not have before.
And I'm
So.
sure too, when you're dealing with a client, whether the client, I take it you mostly deal with moms or like women.
Women, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't
So
have to be moms, but that, that kind of seems to be what I've been through. So it's,
I was just trying to figure out which gender to use. So if she's celebrating, oh, I've got a week behind me or something else, you can say, oh, I remember my first week. Or if she's, down in the dumps because it's just like, oh, it's so hard to go to the party, blah. And you go, yeah, I remember, because you've been there. So you can probably identify with just about everything a client will go through.
Yeah, definitely. And have, tips and then just learning, going through the certification program, learning more too about the subconscious and our mindset and things that I mean, I knew some about before, but now I have so much more knowledge about how we can really change our mindset about alcohol. And so not feeling like you have to white knuckle it through anything. You literally just change how you feel about it, and you don't want it anymore. Like right now, I would have absolutely zero interest in ever having a drink again. And I really didn't think I would get to that point. I thought it was just going to be a white knuckling it kind of willpower thing, which I now know is not, but that's almost impossible.
Yeah. Now you touched on this a few minutes ago, just briefly. My guest last year said that there's been an 80% increase in drinking in the last 30 years. That's crazy. And what do you see as reasons?
I think the way that it's portrayed in and with social media too, like, you see a lot of that more now than obviously they were when we didn't even have phones that we could see people's lives on. So I feel like that just seeing it and having it normalized for us. And then, I mean, the stresses of life, right? Of now being these moms who not only are sort of in charge of taking care of the children, but then also some have jobs outside of the home and have all these other responsibilities, and then are shown that this is the way to give them, stress relief and celebration and all of those things I've mentioned before, like showing them that this is a way to do that. I really feel like it's just been in the way that society has conditioned it to us. And then of course the alcohol industry, jumps right in. I mean, they know how to appeal to everything that we're going through. So yeah, that's where I feel like it comes from.
I will say too, from my vantage point at my age, is it's more socially acceptable. Like I'm sure we would have sort of talked behind our hands if some mom was always drinking every night. And now, I've got two daughters, and I don't know how often they drink, but I know they talk about their mom groups and they do get out and about, jeepers, why didn't we do that? But yeah, it's definitely just more socially acceptable. And then I think too, what I see now is all these fun drinks, like the vodka spritzers or whatever they're called, like all that stuff. It makes it fun, it's
And rosé all day. I mean, that was created for my age group, right? It all in the marketing, all in the advertising, all in the ways to make it more appealing versus just like a bourbon on the rocks, For women, they try to market it, the more festive drinks, and then those commercials. I mean, it's always, women out dancing and looking beautiful and having those beautiful drinks, and with the tiny little warning at the end
Oh
that
yeah.
is so ridiculous.
Well, the warning is usually only, or at least that I've seen, is mostly only if you're pregnant. You shouldn't be drinking.
Or drink responsibly. That's
Yeah.
the little thing that they'll throw in there, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, and after a couple of drinks, like how responsible can you be?
Yes,
It just makes
exactly.
the next one easier. Yeah. Now it also comes with health risks, drinking dose. Can you touch on some of that?
And there's obviously been more and more research, thankfully, lately to show that, and the World Health Organization just said, I think it was in last year, that there is no safe amount of alcohol. So that's pretty clear. And I know in Canada, I think you all have had more strict sort of daily requirement in the like the way that they describe things like that than in the US. I think that might be pretty recent too, which I applaud you all for very much. So it's becoming more prevalent. There's a lot more discussion about it in the news and more studies that are showing how it increases, the chances of or the risk of heart disease and and breast cancer. That was a huge one for me. Because, I thought I was doing all of these things to protect my health by, exercising and eating. I eat pretty much vegetarian, I'm more pescatarian, but all of those things, I thought I'm doing all this to prevent me from getting cancer. And here I am drinking a known carcinogen every night. And yeah, and I don't. In 1988, alcohol was declared a carcinogen, and I don't know how often people are aware of that. I mean, it was sort of news to me when I learned about it. So with the studies showing the increased risk of cancer and dementia now too, they're correlating alcohol use with increased risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. And then the studies that show that at one point were showing that alcohol was heart healthy, those have all been debunked. And so but people still remember that, like that's the one that, but it, oh, one glass of red wine is supposed to help your heart. No, it's not. So yeah, it's definitely not good. It's not good for us, that is for sure.
I think it's really easy too when you say a glass of wine. I mean, as a joke, one time I know somebody bought me a wine glass that it literally held 22 ounces because I measured it. And I mean, I'll be honest, I never drank out of it. At least not wine, not wine. I'd have, like a lime and tonic or something out of it or something, but not al alcohol. It's just like, okay, gotta draw the line somewhere. But yeah, like all those silly gifts. And as you say, like the glasses that, say mom juice and all that sort of stuff, it doesn't help. And women metabolize it differently too. Like it gets into our system more quickly than in men.
And then as we get older too, that's the thing around like the perimenopause, menopause stage, the way women metabolize it changes again. So you're already women just metabolize it differently than men just in general. And then when we come to the perimenopause, menopause stage with the hormone changes, it's metabolized differently. It stays in our system longer. It actually increases the estrogen, which then is, which is what the link with breast cancer is. And then that also doesn't help when you're trying to figure out your hormone balance with menopause and perimenopause. So yeah, it definitely affects women differently. And at first you you might just think, oh, it's just me, but it's everybody. Like the glass of, or the two glasses of wine you had in your 20s is so different than the two glasses of wine you're having in your 40s and 50s. And that's just physiological. Like there's nothing you can do about that, too.
So, can you explain what happens to our bodies? I mean, you've talked about with alcohol, as we wean off or quit, like let's just go straight with quitting.
Yeah.
How quickly do things improve? What are the improvements?
Yeah. And so, and this is another piece of information that's kind of eye-opening. If somebody only drinks on the weekends, that could be a pattern, like, oh, I only drink on the weekends. But the alcohol's effects, if you had your last drink, let's just say on Sunday evening, and then you think, okay, by Friday, all of that's gone, it's really not, because the hormones that are released, especially the stress hormones like cortisol, that stays in your body for up to 7 days. So you're never really, even if you think I'm just a weekend drinker, it's still affecting you throughout the week with your the increased stress hormones, which give that the feeling of that anxiety. Anxiety is a little more of the extreme versus just the generalized anxiety that that's felt when you have the cortisol through your system. So knowing that, it takes, like, after the first 3 days, you are definitely starting to detox and feeling it coming out of your system. Like I said, the fatigue was real for me. And maybe headaches are possible too. And I had a hard time falling asleep sort of on my own during those that first few days, because my body was so used to kind of to being not sedated sort of to sleep. Like, if I drank up until 10 o'clock at night, went to bed at 11, there was enough alcohol in my system that I was pretty much just out. But then I'd wake up at 3 a.m. with that rush of adrenaline and anxiety. And that's when the stress hormones have really peaked during the middle of the night, and the numbing agents are gone. So that's what wakes you up to a jolt. So those are not pleasant evenings or mornings either. So that took a few days. I was expecting that to be quicker, but as I was reading books, and so I knew, no, this is normal. Don't worry. And so then by that first week, my sleep was so much better. I could fall asleep on my own, and I wasn't waking up in the middle of the night with those jolts. So that was immediate to me. I mean, a week to me, that equals immediate. So that's probably one of the first things somebody would notice, is after that initial hard time falling asleep, sleep improvement. And then just like my GI health drastically improved. I didn't realize, that some of the things that were happening were not like normal. To me, it was normal to like have sort of a rumbly, icky stomach at certain times of the day, usually in the morning. That all went away as my gut health was able to re-heal, because the alcohol, can really mess with that, along with, oh, I'm jumping ahead to long term because I'm thinking of cholesterol and liver health. But yeah, during the initial time, I would expect somebody to get improved sleep, better just gut health, feeling that pretty quickly. And the fatigue goes away, and then I had like natural energy, which I felt like I hadn't had in forever, because I was always waking up feeling just that hungover-ish. I mean, how it is, I'm sure. Yeah, what's a hangover? Please tell me more. But all of that, just not having that every day anymore, was amazing. So, and when I kind of mentioned the long-term effects, I had my cholesterol was last checked like the October before I quit in January. And when I went, and it was high, I mean, it had been high for a long time. It was 249, which is anything above 200 is high. So when I went back in the next October, so had stopped drinking for almost 10 months then, it dropped 50 points.
Oh, wow.
And he was sort of like, and I'd lost weight too, which, first he was like, wow, you've lost some weight. And then he was like, oh my gosh, and your cholesterol. And of course he was like, what have you done? I said, I quit drinking. And he was like, he's like, yeah, I don't think he expected such a huge drop in my cholesterol from that. And I didn't either. I mean, I was hoping it would drop some, but that comes back to our liver. Liver helps metabolize the cholesterol. And so if my liver was, consumed with having to get rid of the alcohol first, because that's what it focuses on first, breaking it down. And then that will lead, if your liver is focused on that, the cholesterol will build up and fat deposits, and that's when the fatty liver happens to. And then also just gaining weight, because alcohol is just the extra calories are stored as fat. So all of those things, all of those positive things happened, I would say, within that first year. Anything that I felt was off was back to normal that I didn't realize was normal because it'd been so long since I'd felt it.
Now, is it true too that the liver will actually recuperate, shall we say,
Yeah.
with time?
Yeah, our livers are miracle little organs, and they can regenerate too, even with just a normal, not necessarily alcohol related things. And the scary thing is, my liver enzymes were always normal. And I mean, when you get that blood work back, I would always like check, like, oh, this is it. I'm gonna get, called out or something. But they were always normal. And I've heard that people have had normal enzymes, people who've, have consumed more alcohol than somebody else, and their liver enzymes will just go from normal to abnormal within a quick period of time. So I'll never know how close I was to actually getting like irreversible liver damage. And when I found that out, that was a very sobering fact too. Because I always just thought I was okay because of that, but I've learned that you can go from okay to not okay quickly. And then you're beyond the liver's capabilities to repair itself and going on liver transplant lists. And yeah, so
Now, alcohol consumption is probably one of the most lied about things when we go to the doctor. Only socially, one glass with dinner, only on the weekends, like all that stuff. Is there a middle ground where that becomes true? Like any one of those, not all of them, but any one of those can become true? Or do you think that, if somebody's drinking too much, then probably weaning themselves off or quitting, whatever, is the better idea?
from the data and from the studies, that's where I get my like truth from. And the fact that it's stated that no amount of alcohol is considered safe, that it does not improve our health in any way, there's no positive benefits to it. To me, that just says no, there's not. And I feel like, if somebody truly is a true social drinker, drinks every 6 months at a wedding or just something like that and never think about it, then that's fine. I think if you think about it, if you're ever like, maybe I should cut back, or I don't know if this is really serving me anymore, anytime you've kind of got that already in your mind, I think it's your intuition telling you something. And so I just feel like anybody who thinks about it beyond just, yeah, I'll have another drink at the wedding, or Christmas or whatever, that just shows it's worth taking some time to actually really look into it and seeing how your life could change without it, and examining that your relationship with it. Because yeah, everybody is definitely different. I agree with that for sure, but
Well, as I was saying those two, it occurred to me that maybe only on the weekends, but just one glass with dinner invariably leads to another glass after dinner. But maybe to say if I'm with a group of people, then I'll have a couple of drinks. That may be the easiest one to go to, but it still sounds like you're dangling the carrot in front of yourself in some ways.
Yeah, and if you're looking forward to that event, not only because you're seeing people, but also because you're going to drink. I mean, again, that sort of shows you where your mindset is, too, versus just. And now I don't like now to me socializing with it. I can't even imagine, because to me, you're when you're out and you're with friends and you're connecting. Alcohol just totally numbs that out to me. And it just becomes the focus can become more on alcohol, or everybody starts repeating themselves, and you're just not having any conversations that are meaningful or deep. There's a surface level. And so to me, like the socializing with alcohol doesn't make sense anymore, obviously.
Well, and you mentioned also the weight gain. I used to teach healthy lifestyle things. And the one thing I always said about alcohol consumption is after a couple of drinks, suddenly the nachos look good, or let's go out for late night appies or something. It just becomes easier to eat more, and then it's late at night. So and even those choices, you're not going to pick up carrot sticks. So.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah. I mean, I can totally relate to that. I definitely was always wanting like a little snack too while I was, having the drinks, and not picking the best choices. And then overeating whatever it was too, most likely that I was eating, because I was sort of numb to if I was full or not full. And with the stomach being kind of just irritated anyway, sometimes that makes you think, oh, I might need a little bit more food. My stomach is rumbling.
Now, if a listener is listening and says, yeah, this makes sense, I should really do this, but she knows her friends are going to give her a hard time about it, do you have any go-to responses?
Yeah, definitely. And I what I during my first month of being alcohol free, it was during COVID. So I really had this protective barrier. I wasn't going out, so I appreciate that I had that time to really just settle into my own routine and figure out what I was doing and what I wanted to do and say. But if I was doing it again, like if I was doing it right now and every social things are happening, mentioning, I'm just doing a break for a month, like picking dry January or sober October, one of those times to try it out. And then you've just got that sort of built-in excuse, or mentioning that you're just, and also an easy one for one night out is I'm driving tonight. I mean, nobody's going to be like, oh, well, just no, you can still have two drinks. So that can be an easy go-to if it's a one-time situation that you're worried about. And then just saying, I've been alcohol free for a week and I feel so much better, and I'm just, going to see how this goes. Like, I don't feel like people are going to argue with that if you're saying you're doing it for health reasons or just as an experiment or just because you're driving, just because it's this month. And then that can give you that space for that night to then just still get through that night and build up that confidence of this is okay. And I feel like people will be more surprised that people don't pay that much attention to what you're drinking. If you just have something in your hand, I mean, sometimes that's enough too, to for nobody's gonna say, hey, you want me to go get you a drink? I've got one. They don't have to know what's in it. And or you can also just say, yeah, I'd love a soda and water, like whatever your confidence level is at that point. You can, bring that to me now, thinking if somebody judging me for not drinking, it just makes me so mad, because an alcohol is really like the only substance that is known to be bad for you, but people ask why you're not having it. Like nobody says, why are you not using cocaine tonight? Why are you not shooting up heroin tonight? But it's why are you not drinking? Like it's infuriating how it's the pressure. So building up that confidence too. I mean, if somebody's really being a jerk about it, you can just tell them, I'm not drinking, and you sound like an idiot because you are drinking,
Well, and I think to a certain extent, it might be a good idea to practice some of those responses so that your
Yes.
friends don't, you like, especially the friends, the strangers, who cares?
Right,
But
right.
friends don't think you're judging them for drinking.
Yes.
You know, so
Yeah.
it's.
Yeah. Right. Because, and I feel too, like anybody who, it can be a mirror to people, like somebody who's also struggling, but not talking about it or not there yet, but it's in their mind, like they've thought about it. And then they see you not drinking. I think it just mirrors to them, like, that's probably something that they could consider too, but they don't want to right then, and it's almost like they can get defensive about it, and just realizing that's not your fault, it's not my fault if I'm not drinking and you are, and you're put out by it. It's not my fault, right? And so just being able to realize that too, and know that it's just something that they're dealing with, and maybe you eventually will be a role model for that person, or somebody that they can, now they know, oh, you're not drinking, I can talk to you about it, and have that person to share with, which can really be nice, helpful to have another person in your circle who is also alcohol free. Can be nice to be able to share that, and have that connection too.
I know back in the day, especially 30, 40 years ago, people were like, why aren't you drinking? I'll get you a drink or whatever. If I was at a social situation, I would order a scotch because I can't stand scotch.
Very smart.
So if it got to even close to my lips out of like a habit or something, it was like, oh my God, what am I doing? This is disgusting.
That is a good
And
one.
now, of course, there's so many, like a Virgin Caesar is my go-to. Make it hot and spicy, and I'm just gonna love it. And nobody knows that it's not got alcohol in it.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, most places now too have, not just like a, generic Shirley Temple kind of, they have really nice and, equally expensive mocktails on their lists. And then I was never a huge beer person, but like the non-alcoholic beers are very convincing, in flavor, in terms of just getting enough hops or whatever is in there that that person enjoys. They can really hit that closely. So there's so many ways you can now.
I can address this because in my notes I have there's a Canadian site called upsidedrinks.ca. It's got over 2,000 choices.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, whether it's, like hard liquor, like spirits resembling, or wine or beer or coolers, like whatever, they've got like everything covered. My favorite drink, so I never buy it, is a gin and tonic. I love a good gin and tonic. But I've found a non-alcoholic gin that I love,
Which one is
and
it? Which brand is
it's
it?
okay, it's called Seedlip.
Yes, I love Seedlip.
So but I think people just don't realize that. Like, I like this specific beer or whatever. I don't know much about beers, but they can probably find a replacement that's non-alcoholic. I mean, as I
Yes.
say, with 2,000 choices, that blew me away when I saw that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, Seedlip was one of the first things that showed up on my doorstep during that I, because I was trying to order things, and I loved using that with tonic or club soda and fruit. Just and oh my goodness, yeah, they're very, very good.
There was, I actually tried to do an online search just because I'd heard that some of them weren't very good. And you can get some of them in the grocery store. And I find that, yeah, some of them are okay. Anyways, there was a couple of gin substitutes. And so I went with the one that had the highest, like, preference rating for with imbibers or non-imbibers. And it was Seedlip. So I got it. And I was like, oh, this is really good.
Yeah, they've got, I
And
think they
so.
have four different kinds now too of like mixers to use, and one
Oh.
is, I can't remember the newest one I do not have yet, but I think it's more for like margaritas and that kind of, using it
Oh, I see.
as
Okay.
that base, more like a tequila, I guess.
Oh,
But
okay.
yeah, I'm all for
Yeah.
mocktails.
Now, one of your topic suggestions was why your empty nest next chapter is the perfect time to quit wine. You've talked about mom culture, but talk to us about empty nest.
Yeah, so it's a time, as you, I know you must know if you've got two grown children.
I got three of
three, I'm sorry.
them.
It's such a time of like change for us, because the main role of being the mom is, slowly going away as they become teenagers and start doing everything on their own. And then that moving out, it shows you like, okay, now it's my time again. Like, this is, I don't have somebody here to always to be worried about. I mean, we still worry about them, of course. And so I've just realized it could be a time when it's a reason to say, oh, I can drink more now. Like, I don't have to worry about them seeing me too, which could be a whole nother thing, but also just, driving somewhere, or just the things that my, or getting up early for, a soccer game on Saturday. Like, all of that is gone, and now it's just your time. And so it could go one way of somebody thinking we can go out more and drink more and not worry about things, or the way that I like to present it is, it's this time to really start to focus on yourself again, figure out what you like, and maybe start a new career or a hobby that you did before that you didn't have time to do once the kids were around. And just rediscovering all of that from this clear state of mind, this clarity, the freedom that I feel so strongly now, that this is the time to say, it's a new chapter, it's my chapter, and the world is open to me at this point. So I feel like getting the alcohol out, the thing that's sort of holding you back and that's become your crutch or just become a part of your routine, getting that out to then be able to explore all the things that you could do now, it just seems like the perfect time to me.
One change I noticed, which was sort of interesting, was when I was young and, working full time, no marriage, no kids, is a glass of wine with lunch was that decadent thing that you would do. And then, of course, it became totally ridiculous once, life happens, you got a household and kids and stuff like that. So it was one of those things that I thought, oh, this would be kind of cool to go back to. If you go for lunch with somebody, have a glass of wine. I tried it once or twice and I was asleep by 2 in the afternoon. So
Yeah.
it's like, okay, no, we'll figure out
You're
something
not a
else
day drinker.
to No. So that was, yeah, it was sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that I'm going to stick with our audience generally? They're in their 60s and 70s,
Yeah.
that you want to say to them about alcohol consumption?
Yeah, and one of the thoughts that I had during my, when I was still drinking, but when I would have those moments, probably my 3 a.m. moments, was, what is it going to take for me to stop? Like, I don't know. I don't feel like I need a rock bottom moment, but what would it be? And I worried about, once, if my children decide to have children, being the grandparent, and then my children not being comfortable with me as the, oh no, what were you?
I'm making faces because it's like my eldest grandson is 15
Oh yeah.
and he does, it's the opposite. It's not the judgment. It's like, oh, grandma, you're making dinner. Do you want me to pour you a glass of wine? And I've been thinking about that of like, I'm really normalizing this for the grandchildren. And especially this one, because his parents don't really drink at all.
Oh, so
So,
they,
you know, as long as he understands it's only a grandma thing, I think we're
right.
good. Anyways, you keep on going. I'm sorry. It's just I was covering my
No.
face thinking, oh my God, she's pointing at me, but
No.
not quite. But anyway, so yeah, the children thinking, oh, we don't want the kids to see.
Yeah, or just yeah, that if I was still having to or drinking every day, every night, like how would I, because my parents, there was no drinking when I was growing up and they never drank. I mean, they weren't like, there wasn't really reasons that they had kind of seen it in their childhood and their family and knew that they didn't want that. So I didn't grow up around drinkers at all. So I never worried about them. Like if they were going to have to pick up my kids to some night, you know, I never had to think, oh, well, what if they've been drinking? And I didn't ever want my kids to think that about me. Like if they couldn't call on me in an emergency or anything to go, you know, help pick up their child, my grandchild, their child, because they're worried about if I was drinking. And it was just one of those, again, just things that hit me at 3 a.m., then the panic mode. And I was like, what am I, how am I going to stop? And that was honestly a part of it. It was like, if I feel like by the time I am, you know, potentially a grandmother, that I'll want to stop then, why don't I stop now? Like, why keep doing this for another 15 years if I know that it's not going to end well, potentially? So, for just, and even the modeling it, I mean, you know, I know that I'm not trying to call you out. I didn't know that you're. But I think like I'm trying to just like break those normalization standards. Like I want to call it out for what it is. Like this is just, we're being lied to. And my children, my daughter, I mean, she's 21, so she's legal and, you know, to drink now. And she's, you know, said like she'll still drink. I know she's, you know, she'll tell me too when she's had, but she's always like, I drank less than anybody else and everybody's hungover this morning and I'm not. And she talks freely with me about it. And I know that she's seen the changes and that makes me feel so good. I mean, you know, I'm never going to say don't ever drink, but for me to be able to model the change to her is powerful. And then, you know, with my son, I mean, he's 17. I don't want to be naive, but he doesn't talk about things as much. But I still know that he knows what I'm doing. He knows about this change and he's so excited for me. And mainly he wants me to get Instagram, like go viral on Instagram. Like, I don't think I'm going to go. Well, probably not with this. Who knows? I mean, could buy something else. But so just that pride that they have in me is powerful. So yeah, so for someone who is in that, you know, more in the grandparent stage, it's never too late to change is the thing that I feel like too. I mean, if somebody decided then I'm going to quit, I mean, that still is showing, you know, your grandkids, we're never too old to quit. We're never too old to learn something new or try something new now that we did quit. So.
Well, and I know too, when the kids were younger, as I mentioned at the beginning, I did spend a lot of time as a single mom. And because I'm one of those people, you know, I call a spade and I can be silly and goofy and stuff like that. I never wanted anybody to say, oh my God, how much did Agnes have to drink the other night? So I would never drink in social situations so that people knew that if I was, you know, giving them a hard time or being silly, that's who I am. And I find myself now at this age also in social situations of I will often choose to not drink for the exact same reason of you can't judge me for drinking too much because guess what? You know, it's tonic and lime. You know, that sort of thing. If you think I'm being silly, well, that's who I am. You know, so that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's powerful. I mean, and that you, does anybody ever give you any hard time about not drinking? Have you encountered that? Or do people just think that you are because of having, you know, something
Yeah, I got a
in your
tonic and
life?
lime usually. So, but as I say, you know, if they say, "Can I get you another drink?" I say, "Sure, that's great." And I will often talk to the bartender, and say, really important that I do not drink alcohol. So if somebody's coming to get me a drink, it's only tonic and lime or something like that. I've been known to chat up
That's awesome.
the
That's a great tip too there.
bartender. Now, you offer programs. You have two programs, is it?
Well, I have the one-on-one group coaching program. I mean, not group, excuse me, the one-on-one private coaching. Group's not yet. And then single sessions, because sometimes I feel like maybe somebody just wants to really like delve in a, an hour and talk about what they're going through to see if they want to pursue the more intense, 12-week program. But the 12-week program is a one-on-one. We have, Zoom once a week, and it's just, me and the person. They also have unlimited texting, so you can get in touch with me basically. You don't have to wait to the next call, right? So I have that, like, we can be in communication throughout the entire time too via text. And then too, if somebody is just interested in just finding out more about it, I have free calls where we can, like 30-minute calls, and just sort of talk about where you're at, where you might want to go, how, and what could be a way for you to get to that point. So, yeah, all of those options are shown on my website too.
So in my notes, I've got Mindful Month to try it out, Freedom Uncorked for commitment.
I have a Mindful Month kit, which is a fully digital kit. It's a 28-day like self-guided exploration. It includes a journal with prompts for each day. It includes a mocktail recipe book. So I've got some of my favorites, and I mentioned some of the alternatives in there too that I like that are just easy, right? I've got five audio meditations, like guided meditations for different scenarios, one for the morning, one for the evening, one before you're going to go out, like a social confidence kind of meditation to just really get grounded before you go out. And then also if you're having like a craving, let's call like urge surfing meditation. So I've got all those in there recorded, and then some like little emergency support cards you can download on your phone. So if you're out, I've got one with like social connections, like things to say if somebody offers you a drink. It's totally directed towards that, so you can have it on your phone. So that's just like a kit that is, again, it's all as soon as you have immediate access to it, and it's self-guided. So that's sort of a good way to kind of feel it out, like what it might feel like to just be mindful about your drinking for a month. It's not about quitting. It's not about judging yourself at all. It's just a way to be mindful about it. So that is available as well, as long along with the coaching package.
Cool. So where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Yes, my website is Living Free with Emily. I love the freedom part. So livingfreewithemily.com. And that's my handle too on, all the socials, Instagram, Facebook, Threads. Not TikTok yet, sorry. Haven't expanded out to TikTok.
It's funny, I was, because obviously I was around when TikTok happened, and it was just like, oh, another thing. No.
I know.
And the nice thing about working with like my boomer age group is that a lot of these new ones, they're not bothering. So
Yeah,
if I
yeah.
can't find my peeps, why would I go there?
Yeah,
So,
exactly. Yeah.
oh dear.
Yes, yeah.
Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Yes, absolutely.
You're an adoption mom, both international and multi-species.
Yes,
Can
you're
I ask
right.
what opened that door for you?
So I'll talk about the dog and the cat first. I'm assuming that's what you mean by the multi-species. Yeah, so we've had our cat Simba, who made an appearance here a little while ago. He's 10, and he served. We had a dog before Simba who passed away about 6 years ago. Yeah, because, and then now we have Mowgli, who is our poodle, who Simba had to readjust to after. I think he really thought after the first puppy was gone. I'm not puppy. I mean, he was 11 when he passed away. I think he thought, "Ooh, I got the house to myself." And then we brought in Mowgli. So yeah, we've got the poodle and our orange cat Simba. So they get along. It's funny. I mean, they have their moments, but they're very cute together. And then, yeah, my children, my oldest, my 21-year-old daughter, she was born in China, and my 17-year-old son was born in Vietnam. And so we, both of them were adopted when they were about 13 months old.
Oh, okay.
So that was an amazing, I mean, it's just been amazing. I would love to go back and visit both places too. It's just so expensive to go back and take them back. So we hope to do that one day for sure. That's like a goal trip. But yeah, they are amazing.
We have several people in our circle, and even going back as far as, I mean, my eldest is 40 something now. But going back to the early days, there was a family in the hood who was, I think they had three children from three different places. And then in my daughter's group, there's another family that adopt internationally. So yeah, it's interesting and yeah, major commitment and takes time, I take it too, doesn't it?
Definitely. And now, oh gosh, I mean, now I almost feel like it's almost impossible now to adopt internationally with the way everything is. But at the time, yeah, it still took a while for sure. For sure. And I was definitely not, I mean, I thought was, yeah, they were, I wasn't really, I didn't really drink that much then. Just getting through all that paperwork, my goodness, I had to have a clear mind.
It drove you to drink. No, I'm just kidding. So you must have learned a fair bit along the way, just in terms of different cultures and, you know, that sort of thing. Really interesting.
Yeah, we tried as much as we could, especially when they were younger, to. There were other families in our area who had adopted as well, especially China. Like that was more common at that time. We adopted her in 2005, and so several families in our somewhat small town. So we would get together, have little celebrations around the Lunar New Year, and have there was a local Chinese group that. Of like adults who would let us come in with these, little
Oh,
babies
nice.
and bring them to these celebrations. So it was great. It was not as much for my son, but he was also not as interested in learning the dances and whatnot of this
It
culture.
goes for any family. You've always got 5,000 photographs of your first kid, and then after that, the other ones say, "Was I adopted? What do you know? Where did I come from? Did I just show up at age five?" Oh, dear. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes, and all the links, social, everything, are on your page at our website.
Thank you.
Listeners, Double Dog Dare, what's your relationship with alcohol? Has it changed with age, with marital status, with social circle? Please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. If there was a question I didn't ask Emily, ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. I think most people I know will admit my comment about our alcohol consumption being one of the most lied about topics at this time of life is true. Share this conversation with a good friend and then open the conversation. It'll be good for both of you. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button and help us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free. You get notified every time an episode is released. Emily Allen, thank you for being my guest today. And first of all, being so open about your own experience, but talking about the changes and giving us great encouragement to reduce or at least own our alcohol consumption. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for letting me be here.
Have a great rest of week.